In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
That's right, 20 minutes after 5 o'clock time to talk movies. It's Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10 at 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Alan Adams from The Main Edge joins us. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Nice to see you again.
Good to see you as
well. Well, we did get to hang out on Saturday at our friend Jason Preble's baby shower.
Yeah, no, Preble made a baby. How about that?
That's crazy.
Sooner rather than later. We're like a month away from baby P making her debut.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Had some pie.
Yes. Oh, there was a considerable amount of barbecue and pie.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I left there. I didn't eat again.
Oh, no, I didn't need to.
No, I did not eat again that day. I was just like, oh, yeah, no, I've had two gigantic plates of barbecue, and oh, wait, there's pie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's a hell of a way to spend a Saturday afternoon.
Indeed. The only thing better will come in a couple of weeks when Wayne's Wiffle for a Wish returns, and we get to go out there and show what we're made of.
Oh, yeah, I'm super excited. It's a highlight of the year for me, certainly a highlight of the summer, and I'm very excited to get out there and and return once more to the championship game.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to happen this year. I mean, we're loaded.
It's true.
I mean, we got everybody back from last year, plus our secret weapon, Bryce.
Yes. It looks like we're certainly prepared for success. But again, you never know.
Can we beat those high school kids? Were they from Howland?
Oh, the ones who beat us last year?
Yeah.
Oh, Wayne moved them up.
He did?
Yeah, they're not in our division anymore.
Oh, good.
Yeah, right?
Oh, so it's back to old geezers.
That's right. Get the, we don't want those young, energetic folks springing around the wiffle ball field like gazelles.
When they were 12, it was one thing.
Oh, yeah. Like when they're like 10 years old.
But
yeah,
now they're men.
I feel pretty good about what I'm doing. But yeah, no, they're grown now.
Yeah, that's not fair.
And they're grown and we're 6 years older.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's nothing fair about that at all.
I did see that our friend Ryan Waning has got a team.
I saw that too.
With his pro wrestling takeover.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited to see. Well, who's playing on the team? I assume Ryan will be playing. But will there be wrestlers? That's the big question for me. Am I going to get to watch a professional wrestler play wiffle ball? Because I didn't think Wayne's Wiffle for a Wish could get any better, but it sounds like it might.
You get guys out there in singlets, then that is fantastic. I hope that happens.
Use plenty of sunscreen, though, guys.
Oh, you have to. No question. So you got to the movies this weekend, saw a couple?
I saw three.
Oh, my goodness.
If you can imagine that.
All right, well, where do we start?
Well, we saw, you know what? Let's just go in order. How's that sound?
What did Mike Lowe ask about? Oh, The Meg.
Oh, that goes into wide release this coming weekend.
Oh, okay.
I'm very enthusiastic about it.
So is Mike's wife, apparently.
It's a giant, it's Jason Statham fighting a giant shark. Like, what's not to love about this movie? And every trailer I see for it, it's like, oh man, it's like the shark keeps getting bigger.
Yeah.
So I'm super jazzed about it. I saw The Spy Who Dumped Me.
Oh, yes.
Which is a, it hasn't been getting a lot of critical love. Rotten Tomatoes has it, I think, in the high 30s the last I checked. And, I'm usually more or less on board with the RT rankings. Like, it's an aggregator, so, it generally kind of lands at a fairly decent consensus. But every once in a while, I significantly like or significantly dislike a movie more than the voice of the people. And this is one of those cases, because I actually really liked The Spy Who Dumped Me. The basic gist is Mila Kunis plays a woman whose boyfriend has recently dumped her, only it turns out that said boyfriend is actually a spy. And he has procured something that a lot of very dangerous people would like to get their hands on. And all these entities, whether they're, CIA or MI6 or various like vaguely Eastern European mafioso types and secret agents and whatnot, they all seem to think that she knows where this thing is, only she doesn't really. and so she winds up getting sort of thrust into this incredible amount of international intrigue along with her friend, her weirdo best friend, played by that player of weirdo best friends, Kate McKinnon. They wind up going to Europe and going on crazy spy adventures where they're left to try and figure out what it is they've got, how they're supposed to take care of it, and who they can trust. Because it turns out there aren't a lot of people out there that are worthy of trust when you're two attractive young ladies wandering through Europe with some sort of very important spy doohickey on your person somewhere. It's fun because I wasn't expecting it to be quite so action-packed. Like, there's some legitimately solid action sequences in this movie. And don't get me wrong, it's very funny. And it's basically like they folded this sort of female buddy comedy into a spy thriller. And so, at its core, you've got the relationship between these two women. Mila Kunis is very talented. And Kate McKinnon is great. Honestly, I think this is the sort of part that I think would have been almost excruciating to watch in the hands of anyone less talented than she is. But she can do. I mean, she can do anything. Mm. Like, she's tremendously talented. The boyfriend, the titular spy who did the dumping, played by Justin Theroux. It's a really good cast, and there are some really good jokes. Again, Kate McKinnon kills every scene she's in. And the action sequences are a lot of fun to watch. It's not a particularly complicated narrative, but I mean, that's not what you're looking for. And it's really nice. Like, and we've talked about this in the past. We're always very excited anytime like a studio comedy kind of makes it into the rotation in the summertime. Like, it doesn't have to all be CGI blockbusters and explosions and action heroes. There's room for laughs in the summertime. I think that's still true. And so it was really nice to see a movie like this where we got some of those laughs. And again, I could see where the critics are coming from. It's a movie that's not without its flaws. But, I had a really good time. My wife had a really good time. The friends we went with, we all had a really good time. And, there's something to be said. There's value in that. And, it doesn't have to be a great movie to be an entertaining one.
Right.
And this is definitely an entertaining movie.
All right. That's one. What else did you get to?
Oh, man. I'll lay money you haven't even heard of this movie. It's called The Darkest Minds.
No, you mentioned that the other day. Nothing about it. No.
It's apparently based on a series, on the first in a series of young adult novels. This first book is also titled The Darkest Minds, and it's basically, I don't know, like YA dystopia Mad Libs. Like, it's one of those movies where it's like literally every cliche and genre trope you can come up with from all of these movies, from The Hunger Games to Divergent to The Maze Runner to et cetera, the ones that managed to go on to have serious success and the ones that were one and done. Like, you can, there, it's all there, and it's there's literally nothing new. As for the plot, I mean, whatever. It's a near future sort of thing. There's a neurological disease, a sort of pandemic that breaks out that only affects young people. And before you know it, 98% of the world's children are gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's bad.
That's bleak. And the 2% that remain, well, they're special, Rich. they have abilities beyond those of normal people.
Hmm.
The government, fearing these people, immediately starts to round them up and place them in facilities, because that's what the government does when this sort of thing happens.
Well, and apparently in any conditions.
Well, and you, and once you're put into one of these facilities, well, they have to have a way to determine, like, what kind of special you are. So there's a rating system, because there's always a rating system. This one's by color. So, which, again, a little on the nose. Yes, so you've got the green ones, who are just everyday run-of-the-mill special. And then you've got the blue ones, who are the ones who can do stuff with their minds, whether it's, like, move stuff or use electricity or whatever.
It's like Carrie Haskell kind of special.
Yeah, no, Carrie Haskell's definitely a blue.
Oh, yeah.
And then you've got the oranges and the reds, who are basically just considered to be too dangerous and are meant to be eliminated.
Ooh.
So we've got this one girl named Ruby who winds up in the one of these facilities because she accidentally removes herself from the memories of her parents.
Accidentally?
Yeah, like she does it. Yeah. This is the first manifestation of her specialness. And so she winds up going to one of these things. She's labeled an orange, but she is able to use said forgetting powers to make the guy say she's green, which is apparently safe. And yeah, and so she's in a facility for 6 years, and then she breaks out with the help of Mandy Moore, who's there for some reason. I mean, she's not playing Mandy Moore. She's some sort of doctor or something. Breaks her out, but then she runs away from Mandy Moore and winds up hooking up with a group of fellow special kids who are driving around in a van looking for what's allegedly a safe haven for the special children. But wouldn't you know it, you can't trust anyone, Rich.
No.
You can't trust anyone. And it turns out that there's a lot more going on here than meets the eye, and Ruby is left to determine if she can save not only herself, but her friends.
Wow.
It's seriously, it's like you might as well just call it like generic young adult dystopia. Like you could title it that and it would make a lot more sense.
Were you checking your phone frequently to see how much time had elapsed?
I checked my phone more times for this movie than maybe any other movie in 2018. It was so boring. I literally forgot the title of the movie like three times while I was watching it. It was just like, what is this movie called again? Why am I here? Like, you know, 99% of the time, I'm a huge fan of my job. But, you know, about 45 minutes into this movie, I'm like, maybe I should go back to school.
A different career path. Great idea. Wow.
But yeah, no, it's not a very good movie. It was clearly intended to spawn an ongoing series. We'll see how that plays out. Yeah. I have doubts.
All right. How about number three? Does that redeem things?
Oh, yes. Very much so. I went to see Christopher Robin.
Oh, man. I want it to be good.
It is.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
It is. It's you know, it's not a great movie. Like, but it's a real sentimental movie, and it's a chance to sort of revisit some characters that I think we all have a fondness for. Mm. Just because, you know, it's like, you know, Winnie the Pooh and that crew, like, they've been a part of the cultural fabric for generations at this point. Like, there are, you know, there are just millions of people out there who have real connections to those characters. And so bringing them back in a different way, I think, is a really smart idea on Disney's part. Basically, the movie starts with a quick montage of like Christopher Robin's last days in the Hundred Acre Wood as a kid before he gets shipped off to boarding school. And so we, you know, we're there. We see him interacting with Pooh and Piglet and Eeyore and Rabbit and Owl, Kanga and Roo, the whole crew. And then he goes off through the tree, the door in the tree, and goes home. And that's when he is, you know, sent off to boarding school. And we get a quick montage of him basically growing up, like, you know, dealing with the issues at boarding school, you know, having the teacher scold him for being, you know, dreamy and imaginative. We see him deal with with his father passing away. And we see him, you know, going on to college and then going to war. Like, he goes to war during World War II he meets his wife. He has a child. And he starts working for the Winslow Luggage Company, and that's where he is when the movie really starts. He's the efficiency manager for the Winslow Luggage Company, and he's one of those workaholic types who has allowed his career to take precedence over his dealings with his family. Evelyn is his wife, played by Hayley Atwell. She's great, and his daughter, Madeline, played by a young lady named Bronte Carmichael, and I'd never seen her before. She doesn't have a whole lot of credits, but she's, you know, I mean, she can't be more than 10 years old, and she's phenomenal. Like, I'm always thrilled to see like a young actor who is you know, capable, and she very much is. So they've got a plan to go away to the country for a weekend. the whole family together. But Christopher Robin demands that he stay, work through the weekend, and because they have to do some sort of drastic cuts to maintain company profitability. And so he sends his family off to Sussex, to his family's old cottage, the cottage where, you know, he grew up with these characters, these friends. Meanwhile, we're watching as Pooh basically waits for Christopher Robin to come back. And he's interacting with his friends and all that, but he's always keeping one eye on the door to see if Christopher Robin's going to come back. Until one day, Pooh wakes up, and he can't find any of his friends. He doesn't know where anybody is. Mm. And he's like, well, I don't know what else to do. I guess I'm going to go see if I can get Christopher Robin to help me. And so he goes through the door and winds up in a London courtyard talking to an adult Christopher Robin, played by Ewan McGregor. He, of course, you know, we very quickly run through the, oh my God, I'm cracking up. Oh wait, I'm not cracking up. Oh, it turns out that, this is real. This is really happening. I have to get Pooh back to the 100-acre wood so I can finish my, you know, my work for the weekend. And then from there we get to watch as he reconnects, with those old friends in a way that, you know, we kind of recaptures his youth a little bit, all the while still struggling to reignite the relationship with his own family. But as you can probably imagine, Pooh and the crew have their own sorts of interactions with the people in Christopher Robin's life, and do so in a way that I think is really very sweet, very charming, and tender-hearted. I don't really want to go into specifics because, you know, there's some fun reveals that happen along the way, but just know that ultimately it's about this idea that becoming an adult does not have to mean forgetting about being a child, and I think that's a really important message, regardless of who you are. And to have it rendered in such a really thoughtful and sweet kind of way, I think is pretty great. McGregor's fantastic. Hayley Atwell is wonderful. The voice cast is beautiful. Jim Cummings, who's been voicing both Pooh and Tigger for like 30 years, like he's takes on those roles. But there are also some real notables. Brad Garrett plays Eeyore, which is hysterical.
Perfect.
Toby Jones is Owl.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Wow, yeah.
Rabbit's a good one too, but I can't remember it off the top of my head. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's a wonderful vocal cast, and this idea that you've got this sort of overlap between the ideas of youth and being an adult. It's just really it's really a lot of fun to watch play out, and this is the great thing. It looks right.
Mm.
Like they look like old, loved, worn, stuffed animals. Like there's nothing cartoonish about them. Like they look like they exist in the same sort of world that everybody else is. They don't feel separate in that way that sometimes get with the sort of the CGI characters, right, and stuff like that. It's just a wonderful job was done in bringing that to life. And I'm sorry, I have to remember who Rabbit was, because it was one of those things that just really struck me and made me laugh. But yeah, it's just so. Oh, that's right. It's Peter Capaldi. It was Doctor Who.
Oh,
Doctor Who was Rabbit.
Right, because, there you go.
You know. But yeah, it's so, as someone who has a real connection to those characters, like I grew up loving like the old Winnie the Pooh shorts.
Me too.
The idea of bringing those characters, not only into our world, but into the world of a grown-up Christopher Robin, like finding out what happens to Christopher Robin. There's something really fascinating about that. And happily, it's rendered in such a way that, Ewan McGregor is able to sort of capture that sort of balance between, you know, making that transition from the stern, like, workaholic father to someone who recognizes the value of childish things. And that dynamic, especially when it's playing out between him and his daughter, is really just lovely to watch. And did I tear up? Yes, I did. Like, I got a little sniffly and sobby a couple of times, because it's that kind of sentimental, but not in a way that makes you feel manipulated in any way,
right?
Which is, you know, again, I recognize that I'm someone who's fairly easily manipulated emotionally when it comes to the cinema, but this one, it felt like it came by it honestly, like it earned the sort of the big feelings that I was feeling.
Nice.
And that's kind of a rare thing. So yeah, if you have love in your heart for these characters, any of them, or just love the idea of something very family forward at the movies, you should really check this one out.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams of the Main Edge Movie Reviews every Monday on Pass the Popcorn. Alan back with us on Wednesday afternoon. We'll see you then.
Yeah, you will.
Looking forward to it.